Appendix C. Encirclements. Encirclements are an outcome that can result from offensive operations to isolate and destroy enemy forces or result from a friendly force being isolated by enemy forces. This appendix provides an overview of encirclement operations and consists of the organization of forces for an encirclement, control measures, and planning and execution of encirclement operations. It also includes what to do if a unit is encircled and how to break out from an encirclement. Encirclement overview. Encirclement is where one force loses its freedom of maneuver because an opposing force is able to isolate it by controlling all ground lines of communications and reinforcement. A unit can conduct offensive encirclement operations designed to isolate an enemy force, or they could become encircled resulting from the unit's isolation by the actions of an enemy force. Encirclements occur because combat operations involving modernized forces are likely to be chaotic, intense, and highly destructive, extending across large areas containing relatively few units as each side maneuvers against the other to obtain positional advantage. Typically, encirclements result from penetrations and envelopments, or are extensions of exploitation and pursuit operations that bypass large enemy forces in order to maintain momentum. As such, they are not a separate form of maneuver but an extension of an ongoing operation. They may be planned sequels or result from exploiting an unforeseen opportunity. They usually result from the link-up of two encircling arms conducting a double envelopment. However, they can occur in situations where an attacking unit uses a major obstacle, such as a shoreline, as a second encircling force. Although a commander may designate terrain objectives in an encirclement, isolating and destroying or defeating enemy forces are the focus. Ideally, an encirclement results in the surrender of the encircled force. This minimizes friendly force losses and resource expenditures. A key consideration prior to executing an encirclement is understanding that the encircling force is fixed and therefore unavailable for other operations until the enemy force being encircled is reduced. Organization of forces for an encirclement. An encirclement operation usually has at least two phases, the actual encirclement and actions taken against the isolated enemy forces. Commanders consider adjusting subordinate units' task organizations between phases to maximize unit effectiveness in each phase. The first phase is the actual encirclement that results in the enemy force's isolation. The organization of forces for an encirclement is similar to that of a movement to contact or an envelopment. The unit executing an encirclement organizes encircling forces into a direct pressure force and one or more encircling arms. Armored, mechanized, and motorized infantry, air assault, and airborne units are especially well suited for use as an encircling force since they have the tactical mobility to reach positions that cut enemy ground lines of communication. Bypassed and non-encircled enemy forces on the flanks and rear of advancing friendly forces require all-around security. A commander should direct the encirclement effort. However, there must also be unity of command for each encircling arm. The encircling force headquarters may name one of its subordinate units as the headquarters for an encircling arm. Alternatively, that force's headquarters may create a temporary command post from organic assets, such as its tactical command post, to control one or more arms of the encirclement. If that encircling arm has subordinate inner and outer arms, each of them also requires separate subordinate commanders. The missions and spatial orientation between the inner and outer encircling arms are sufficiently different. Therefore, one force cannot act in both directions at once. The encirclement unit organizes only an encircling arm if there is no possibility of the encircled forces receiving relief from enemy forces outside the encirclement. If there is danger of an enemy relief force reaching the encircled enemy force, the unit organizes both an inner and outer encircling arms. The commander assigns the outer encircling arm a security mission, an offensive mission to drive away any enemy relief force, or a defensive mission to prevent the enemy relief force from making contact with the encircled enemy force. Once the encirclement is complete, these inner or outer encircling arms form a perimeter. The second phase of an encirclement operation involves actions taken against an isolated enemy force. The commander's decision to fix, contain, or destroy isolated enemy forces affects the task organization of subordinate units, as do enemy attempts to break out from the encirclement or link up with the encircled force. All these possible outcomes require resources in terms of units and supplies, but some require more resources than others do. If the unit's mission is to contain or fix an isolated enemy force, the unit organizes subordinate forces for defensive action and arranges them around the enemy force's perimeter. If the unit's mission is to reduce or destroy that same enemy force, that unit organizes subordinate forces for offensive action. A higher echelon commander often assigns either mission to the commander of a follow and support force. Regardless of whether a commander decides to fix, contain, or destroy enemy forces, the unit conducts reconnaissance to maintain contact and monitor enemy force actions in response to the encirclement. This allows the unit to respond effectively to any enemy movement. The most effective reconnaissance combines ground, aerial, and surveillance systems to provide constant coverage and multiple assessments of enemy activities throughout the encircled area. Encirclement control measures. Control measures for an encirclement are similar to those of other offensive operations, especially an envelopment, but with a few additional considerations. If the encirclement unit uses both an inner and an outer encircling arm, the unit must establish a boundary between them. The unit places the boundary so that each element has enough space to accomplish their mission. The inner force requires enough space to fight a defensive battle to prevent the encircled force from breaking out. The outer force requires adequate terrain and depth in its assigned area to defeat any attempt to relieve the encircled force. The commander who controls both converging forces establishes an RFL between them. The unit may also establish a free fire area, which encloses the area occupied by a bypassed or encircled enemy forces. The unit may also establish contact points. Planning an encirclement. Encirclement operations may require allocating large forces and significant resources. They take a great deal of time and usually slow in advance. The encircling force maintains contact with an encircled enemy force. The following general planning considerations apply. Units, determine the best available assets that gain and maintain contact with enemy forces. Keep encircled enemy forces isolated and incapable of receiving intelligence, logistics, and fire support from enemy formations outside of the encirclement. Use reconnaissance and surveillance assets so that they know the capabilities of the encircled force and, as much as possible, its commander's intentions. Retain freedom of maneuver. Control fires and fields of fire to avoid fratricide. Units apply the general planning considerations for the offense or the defense depending on the overall mission. Units plan to rotate the forces involved in reducing the encircled pocket to maintain constant pressure on the enemy. Every encircled enemy unit reacts differently. Initially, some become demoralized and cannot offer any serious resistance. Additional methods for psychologically affecting enemy personnel and reducing their mental and physical capabilities is by disrupting their sleep and rest patterns. However, if left undisturbed, most enemy units recover and attempt to break out and regain contact with their main force or attack the flank and rear of advancing friendly units. The encircling force must plan for the enemy force's most probable reactions. If the enemy force is not reduced and it can be resupplied or has access to considerable supply stocks, then it continues to be a serious threat to encirclement units in future operations. The encircling force must be approximately equal in size to this type of encircled force to fix or contain it. This situation occurred when German forces occupied various fortified French ports after Allied armies liberated the rest of France in 1944. Each encircled German division took approximately one Allied division to maintain its isolation. Conversely, an enemy force isolated without adequate supplies either surrenders or faces containment by considerably smaller forces. This situation occurred in Egypt during the 1973 Arab-Israeli War when an Israeli division isolated the Egyptian Third Army. Executing an encirclement. When feasible, encircling forces advance parallel to the enemy's direction of movement. They attempt to reach key passes, bridges, and other critical points before the main enemy force reaches them. When the encircling force cannot outdistance the enemy force, it engages the enemy force's flanks to force the enemy to fight under the most unfavorable conditions possible, ultimately in two or more directions simultaneously. Engineer units rapidly breach obstacles in the path of the encircling force. Friendly forces emplace obstacle complexes supported by fires to block probable avenues of escape as they counter attempted enemy breakouts from encirclement. Units may use air assault and airborne forces to seize key passes or other critical terrain objectives to cut enemy locks. The encircling force completes the encirclement when it cuts all enemy ground locks. This generally occurs when the two arms of a double envelopment complete their linkup. Intervals in an attacking force can also occur during combat operations as the result of different rates of advance by movement formations that face different levels of enemy resistance and different terrain. An encircled enemy force attempts to discover intervals and take advantage of them as it tries to escape or break out of the encirclement. Once the enveloping force completes the linkup that creates the encirclement, it must close these intervals as quickly as possible to prevent enemy forces from exploiting them. An enemy force may attempt to cut off an encircling force and extend its flank beyond the area of the friendly attack. If the enveloping unit attempts to outflank such a hostile extension, it may lead to the overextension of the enveloping force or to a dangerous separation of the enveloping force from support. It is usually better to take advantage of the enemy force's extension and subsequent weakness by penetrating the thinly held front of an enemy force rather than risk the overextension of the enveloping force in an effort to outflank the enemy force's positions completely. Alternatively, in response to the unfolding encirclement, an enemy force may attempt a frontal spoiling attack. In this case, the friendly force in contact defends itself or engages in a delaying operation, while the enveloping force continues the envelopment or moves directly toward the enemy force in a counterattack. Commanders of highly mobile forces forming the inner encircling arm may choose not to establish a continuous series of positions around an encircled enemy force. They may order subordinate forces to occupy only key terrain from which they can strike at encircled enemy forces to prevent them from concentrating forces and to isolate them further. Units who adopt this technique need to be able to detect enemy attempts to break out and concentrate sufficient combat power against these attempts to thwart their efforts to isolate encircled enemy forces. Units of the outer encircling arms prevent additional enemy forces from reinforcing the isolated enemy force or interfering with the activities of the inner encircling arm. Once units decide to destroy encircled enemy forces, they reduce those enemy forces as rapidly as possible to free resources for use elsewhere. The reduction of an encircled enemy force continues without interruption, using the maximum concentration of forces and fires until the encircled enemy forces complete destruction or surrender. Units may destroy encircled enemy forces by fires or by maneuver. Reduction by fires. Reducing an encircled enemy force by fires alone is the least preferred method to destroy an enemy force. This method implies that the encircling friendly force's commander will use fire support as the primary or sole means of reducing the encircled enemy force. It includes the use of artillery, mortars, direct fires, fixed and rotary wing aviation, including armed UAS, and cyber and electromagnetic warfare capabilities. This method has advantages and disadvantages. An advantage is that it generally reduces the number of casualties suffered by the encircling force. Disadvantages of this method include an extensive amount of attack/delivery systems, ammunition, and time to reduce the encircled force. Additionally, fires alone might not be sufficient to force the surrender of the encircled enemy force. In most cases, reducing an encircled enemy force requires using fires and movement. Reduction by maneuver. Reduction by maneuver uses a combination of fire and ground maneuver forces to attack and destroy an encircled enemy force. In many cases, the constraints of time, munitions, and availability of sufficient fires assets will lead a commander to use the reduction by fires and movement method. The four techniques for reducing an encircled enemy are squeeze, hammer and anvil, wedge, and escape route. Squeeze technique. The squeeze technique uses simultaneous coordinated attacks on enemy forces from various directions. Following the initial encirclement, the capture or destruction of an enemy force is methodical and thorough. Units use fire and movement together in a controlled contraction of the encirclement. As an enemy's perimeter contracts, commanders remove units from the inner perimeter and add them to the reserve depending on the terrain and other mission variables. This technique is effective against battalion size or smaller groups of encircled enemy forces. The squeeze technique promotes an enemy force's confusion and rapid dispersion of combat power and prevents an enemy commander from using the enemy's reserves in a decisive manner. The friendly unit shapes the operation by initially concentrating on destroying enemy command nodes, air defense systems, artillery systems, and sustainment capabilities. These sustainment capabilities include any drop zones, landing zones, or airstrips available to the enemy forces that would allow them to receive support from outside the encirclement. Hammer and anvil technique. The hammer and anvil technique employs a stationary blocking force as an anvil on one or more sides of the inner perimeter, while other elements of the encircling force use offensive action as a hammer to force the encircled enemy force against the blocking force. Either the anvil or the hammer can destroy the enemy force. Usually the hammer, as the attacking element, accomplishes this task. This technique is most effective when the blocking force is located on or to the rear of a natural terrain obstacle. On favorable terrain, units can use an airborne or air assault force as the anvil or blocking element. Wedge technique. The wedge technique uses a unit to divide enemy forces in the pocket while the rest of the encircling force remains in place. This technique allows units to concentrate against a small portion of the encircled enemy force. However, the encircling force maintains pressure on other encircled enemy forces to prevent them from reinforcing or supporting the threatened area. The unit dividing the pocket conducts sudden and swift attacks immediately after the end of supporting preparation fires. Escape route technique. The escape route technique involves leaving one or more gaps in the inner encircling arm to entice enemy forces to attempt a breakout. Once an enemy force starts moving and is no longer sheltered in defensive positions, that moving enemy force is more vulnerable to acquisition, attack, and destruction. A unit using this technique should integrate military information support operations with constant offensive action to demoralize the escaping enemy force. The negative aspect of these techniques is that they require considerable forces and supplies, which are not always available. Therefore, at times, the encircling force has to limit itself to less decisive measures. These include temporarily containing or fixing bypassed enemy forces until resources become available to enable the encircling force to destroy the enemy force. Continued isolation of the encircled force can only be guaranteed when the enemy force cannot strengthen its forces by inserting additional units and supplies by air. Even total long-term isolation does not necessarily lead to decisive defeat of an encircled enemy. It is a temporary measure designed to provide additional time to the attacking force. Defending encircled. Encirclement of a friendly force is likely to occur during highly mobile and fluid operations or when operating in restrictive terrain. Unit offensive actions may result in encirclement. Likewise, encirclements may occur when units employ detachments left in contact. Units anticipate becoming encircled when assigned stay-behind missions or when occupying either a strong point or a combat outpost. Units make appropriate preparations in these situations. If a unit finds itself encircled, they immediately form a perimeter defense which can evolve into defending an encirclement. If this happens, distinct tactics exist for the encircled force. An encircled force has the following options. Continue to defend encircled, conduct a breakout, exfiltrate toward other friendly forces, or attack deeper into enemy-controlled territory. Once encircled, the unit's form of maneuver depends on the senior commander's intent and mission variables, including the availability of defensible terrain, relative combat power of friendly and enemy forces, sustainment status of the encircled force and its ability to be resupplied, including the ability to treat and evacuate wounded soldiers, morale and fighting capacity of the soldiers. The senior commander in an encirclement assumes command over all encircled forces and takes immediate action to protect them. In the confusion leading to an encirclement, it may be difficult to determine what units are encircled, let alone identify the senior commander. However, the senior commander is identified within the encirclement as quickly as possible. That senior commander needs to decide quickly what assets should stay within the potential encircled pocket and what assets should leave. The senior commander immediately informs their higher echelon headquarters of the situation. Simultaneously, the senior commander directs the performance of the following tasks: establish security, re-establish a chain of command, establish a reserve, establish security elements as far forward as possible to provide early warning, reorganize and centralize control of all artillery, maintain morale, centralize the control of all supplies. The senior commander positions security elements as far forward as possible to re-establish contact with enemy forces and provide early warning. Vigorous patrolling begins immediately. Each unit clears its position to ensure that there are no enemy forces within the perimeter. Units use technical assets and electromagnetic warfare systems to augment local security and locate areas along the perimeter where enemy forces are deploying additional forces. The senior commander reestablishes unity of command. The senior commander reorganizes any fragmented units and places soldiers separated from their parent units under the control of other units. The senior commander establishes a clear chain of command throughout the entire encircled force, adjusts support relationships with the encirclement, and reestablishes communications with units outside the encircled force. Organization of forces for an encircled defender. With the establishment of a perimeter defense, the commander learns about the specific capabilities and limitations of the different friendly units isolated in the encirclement. The commander uses this information to design a defense to maximize the capabilities of available forces. Forward units establish mutually supporting positions around the perimeter and in depth along principal avenues of approach. Units occupy the best available defensible terrain. It may be necessary to attack to seize key or decisive terrain to incorporate that terrain into the perimeter defense. Once a unit is given an assigned area, preparations are the same as in the defense. Encircled units make their defensive positions as strong as possible given time and resource constraints. The unit anticipates that enemy forces will attempt to split the defenses of the encircled force and defeat it in detail. The encircled force commander establishes a reserve that is mobile enough to react quickly to events anywhere along the perimeter. Therefore, given the availability of sufficient fuel, the unit constitutes a reserve using some of any available armored, mechanized, and striker units. The unit centrally positions this mobile reserve to take advantage of interior lines, which exist if the encircled force commander can maneuver the reserve or reinforce threatened positions on the perimeter faster than an enemy force can shift location or reinforce. A unit can achieve interior lines through a central position, with operations diverging from a central point, from superior lateral locks, or greater tactical mobility. If only dismounted infantry forces are available, the unit establishes small local reserves to react to potential threats. The unit organizes a mobile anti-armor element from the best available anti-armor systems. If possible, subordinate echelons also retain reserves. While defending encircled, a unit may use the reserve to limit penetrations along the perimeter. The reserve may conduct spoiling attacks or counterattacks. The commander initiates a counterattack at the decisive moment and location as the enemy force attempts to penetrate friendly defensive positions. Breakout from an encirclement. A breakout is an operation conducted by an encircled force to regain freedom of movement or contact with friendly units, ADP 3-90. It differs from other attacks only in that a simultaneous defense in other areas of the perimeter must be maintained. A breakout is both an offensive and a defensive operation. An encircled force normally attempts to conduct breakouts when one of the following four conditions exist. The commander directs the breakout, or the breakout falls within the intent of a higher echelon commander. The encircled force lacks sufficient relative combat power to defend itself against enemy forces attempting to reduce the encirclement. The encircled force lacks adequate terrain available to conduct its defense. The encircled force cannot sustain itself long enough for relief by forces from outside the encircled pocket. Organization of forces for a breakout. Encircled units conducting a breakout attack typically task organize to perform rupture, follow and assume, main body, and rearguard missions. The senior commander within an encirclement organizes a reserve and a separate deception force if sufficient forces exist. Previous combat may have attrited the combat power of encircled units. The commander prioritizes which ones to resource if sufficient combat power does not exist to resource each of the forces. Normally, the commander's first priority is to resource the force with the rupture mission. The commander typically assigns multiple missions to subordinate forces because there are typically not enough forces in the encirclement to have separate forces for each required mission. For example, the follow and assume force could receive a be prepared mission to help extract the rearguard, a mission generally given to the reserve. Forces located outside the encirclement assist the breakout by conducting shaping operations. Above all, the encircled force maintains the momentum of the breakout attack, otherwise it is more vulnerable to destruction than it was before the breakout attempt. The encircled force reorganizes to conduct the breakout based on available resources. Without resupply, armored, mechanized, and motorized infantry units may not be able to move all their vehicles during the breakout attack. Priority of support may be limited to the rupture force and the rearguard, with the remaining force keeping only sufficient transportation assets to move the wounded and critical assets and supplies. The breakout plan outlines the commander's destruction criteria for equipment or supplies left behind. The unit destroys all vehicles, critical munitions, supplies, and equipment, except medical supplies, it cannot move. An encircled force attacks using the rupture force to penetrate the enemy defensive positions in at least one location. The unit produces overwhelming combat power at each breakout point. The unit assigns the rupture force, which varies in size from 1/3 to 2/3 of the total encircled force, the mission to penetrate the enemy force's encircling position, widen the gap, and hold the shoulders of the gap until all other encircled forces can move through. The rupture force must have sufficient strength to penetrate the enemy force's position. This force must use surprise, mobility, and firepower to achieve a favorable combat power ratio over the enemy force at the point of attack. Initially, the rupture force is the main effort. The attack occurs where the unit anticipates a successful rupture of the enemy force's inner ring, which facilitates subsequent operations by enabling the unit to attack enemy units from their flanks and rear. The rupture force unit probably has additional attached assets, such as additional maneuver forces and engineers. The unit should integrate these assets to achieve the rupture. The follow and assume force follows the rupture attack and is committed to maintain the momentum of the attack and seize objectives past the rupture. After the rupture force seizes a gap in the enemy encirclement, the follow and assume force normally main effort until completing link-up operations with another friendly force. When a unit receives a follow and assume mission in a breakout, its commander must coordinate closely with the rupture force commander regarding the location of the gap, the enemy situation at the rupture point, and the enemy situation, if known, along the direction of attack past the rupture point. The commander does not assign this force supporting shaping tasks, such as clear routes and fix bypassed enemy forces, if those tasks dissipate its available combat power. If executing these support tasks is vital to the success of the breakout and resources permit, then the unit designates a separate follow and support force to perform these tasks. The main body consists of the main command post, the bulk of encircled sustainment assets, the unit's casualties, and some functional and multifunctional support assets. It contains combat forces not required for other missions and has sufficient combat power to protect itself. The overall commander places one subordinate commander in charge of the various elements of the main body to ensure orderly movement. Typically, the main body establishes a flank security force that deploys once the main body passes through the point of penetration and performs a flank screen or guard mission for the main body. The rear guard consists of soldiers and equipment left on the perimeter to provide protection for the rupture attack and any supporting efforts, such as deception forces. Forces left in contact must conduct a vigorous delaying operation on the perimeter so that the enemy force cannot isolate any portion of the rearguard. Under a single commander, the rearguard protects the main body from attack while it moves from the area. In addition to providing security, the rearguard deceives the enemy forces about the intentions of the encircled force, simulating its activities until the main body clears the gap. A reserve primarily aims to retain flexibility through offensive action. The unit makes every attempt to keep a small portion of the encircled force uncommitted for employment at the decisive moment to ensure the breakout's success. The unit may be unable to establish a separate reserve force because of the need to resource either the rupture force, the follow and assume force, or the rearguard. In this event, the unit assigns and prioritizes various be prepared missions to the follow and assume force. A successful diversion is important to the success of any breakout operation. If the diversion fails to deceive the enemy commander regarding the intentions of the encircled force, the enemy commander could direct the enemy's full combat power at the rupture point. On the other hand, the deception force may rupture the enemy's lines. If a rupture occurs, the diversion force commander follows the intent of the commander of the encircled force. The encircled force commander may choose to exploit the success of forces conducting a diversion, or the commander may have to disengage them for use elsewhere in the breakout attempt. Control measures for a breakout. At a minimum, units use boundaries, an LD or line of contact, a time of the attack, phase lines, an axis of advance or direction of attack, objectives, and a limit of advance to control and synchronize breakouts. Units only impose those control measures necessary to synchronize operations. Planning a breakout. The encircled commander initiates a breakout attack as quickly as possible after encirclement by enemy forces. At this time, enemy forces are normally also somewhat disorganized, and they may not respond in a coordinated manner. Commanders should initiate a breakout attack even though detailed combat information about the enemy force's dispositions is probably not available. The enemy force probably has not yet brought in sufficient combat power to encircle the friendly force in strength, and weak points probably exist in the enemy force's perimeter. Early in an encirclement, there are gaps between or weaknesses in the enemy's encircling forces. The friendly unit uses available reconnaissance and surveillance assets, including available joint systems, to provide information that increases the accuracy of the unit's situational understanding and determines enemy weak points. The unit's plans for the breakout attack capitalize on those identified weak points. Although the resulting attack may be along a less direct route or over less favorable terrain, it is the best COA because it avoids enemy strength and increases the chance for surprise. An encircled force may be operating under adverse conditions and may not have its normal information collection capabilities. This forces the encircled unit to conduct aggressive reconnaissance to collect information on enemy forces. The encircled unit also obtains information from joint assets, stay-behind units, and special operations forces in the area. If the enemy force is in close contact, the encircled unit may need to conduct a reconnaissance in force to ascertain enemy strengths. In any case, the unit quickly selects a COA and develops a plan accordingly. A supporting effort, such as a deception, assists a breakout by diverting enemy attention and resources away from the rupture effort. The force conducting a supporting effort may be located either inside or outside the encirclement area. The enemy force must regard the efforts of this force as credible and a threat to the continuity of the enemy force's maneuver plan. The encircled commander directs the friendly force's deception efforts to a point where the enemy force might expect a breakout or relief effort. The deception force is as mobile as available vehicles, fuel stocks, and traffic ability allow, so it can reposition to take part in the breakout or maneuver elsewhere to support the breakout. Mobile self-propelled weapon systems suit the needs of forces conducting supporting efforts. Additionally, the probability of a successful breakout increases measurably if another friendly force attacks toward the encircled force as it attempts to break out. The encircled unit conducts tactical deception along with cyberspace electromagnetic activities tasks to assist the breakout attempt. Cyberspace electromagnetic activities is the process of planning, integrating, and synchronizing cyberspace operations and electromagnetic warfare operations in support of Unified Land Operations, ADP-3O. Tactical deception operations mislead enemy forces about the intentions of the encircled force, especially the location of the breakout attempt. For example, unmanned aircraft can concentrate their activities in an area away from where the rupture effort occurs to deceive enemy forces as to the exact location of the rupture. If it is not possible to break out immediately, the encircled unit attempts to deceive enemy forces regarding the time and place of the breakout by concealing friendly breakout preparations and changing positions. The encircled unit can also make it appear that the encircled force will make a resolute stand and await relief. Units can use dummy radio traffic for the enemy to monitor or landlines that the enemy might be able to tap to convey false information. The breakout should not be along the obvious route toward friendly lines unless there is no other alternative. In this respect, breakout preparations mirror the preparations for any other offensive operation. As in other offensive actions, secrecy, tactical deception, and surprise allow for success. The other planning considerations for the breakout are the same as for any other attack. Executing a breakout. The unit exploits darkness and limited visibility during a breakout if friendly encircled forces have superior night vision capabilities. Concealment provided by darkness, fog, smoke, or severe weather conditions favor breakout by mitigating the effectiveness of the encircling enemy weapon systems or night vision devices/optics. The enemy has difficulty following the movements of the breakout force during conditions of limited visibility. However, if the encircled force waits for darkness or limited visibility, the encircling enemy may have time to consolidate containment positions. If friendly forces have air superiority, they may initiate a daylight breakout attack to exploit close air support capabilities. The encircled force takes all possible precautions to deceive the enemy force about the location of the main effort. The rupture force minimizes occupation of attack positions before starting the breakout. An encircled unit may require one or more supporting effort to assist the rupture force in penetrating enemy positions and expanding the shoulders of the rupture. The encircled unit may use feints and demonstrations to deceive enemy forces concerning the location and time of the main effort. However, deception attacks need not always occur first. The encircled commander organizes and controls the rupture force in the same manner as during an attack or movement to contact. The rupture force generates overwhelming combat power at the point of penetration and rapidly overwhelms enemy positions and expands the penetration. Encircled units unable to generate sufficient combat power for both the rupture force and the perimeter defense can thin their defensive perimeter in certain areas by using a detachment left in contact in conjunction with a withdrawal before executing the attack. They may also shorten the perimeter's length, which reduces the size of the area occupied by the encircled force. The rupture force applies the breaching fundamentals of suppress, obscure, secure, reduce, and assault to ensure its success at the point of penetration. These fundamentals always apply, but their application varies based on the prevailing mission variables. The encircled commander orders the rupture force to hold the shoulders of the penetration while the follow and assume force moves forward, if enemy forces at the penetration point have roughly the same combat power as the rupture force. The actions of the follow and assume force then become the main effort. The encircled commander may have the rupture force continue its attack if enemy forces are not strong. If there are no identified enemy forces beyond the penetration, the rupture force may transition to a movement to contact. After the encircled friendly force breaks out, it moves toward other friendly forces and links up with them. Initially, the follow and assume force passes through the gap created by the rupture force. This force continues to move rapidly from the encircled area toward its final objective. If the follow and assume force becomes the encircled unit's main effort, it cannot allow itself to become bogged down. Preparation fires by artillery, army aviation, close air support, and air interdiction help the follow and assume force in maintaining momentum out of the encircled area. Once the breakout attack starts, the rear guard and any deception forces disengage or delay toward the area of the rupture. Perimeter forces integrate smoothly into the rear of the breakout column. Once the breakout succeeds, the commander shifts priority of fires as required by the mission variables. As other encircled units support or move through the area of penetration, the rear guard commander must deploy forces over an extended area. The rear guard requires flexibility and mobility. The rear guard maintains the perimeter against enemy pressure. If the enemy force succeeds in destroying or encircling the original rear guard in the breakout process, then the unit must reconstitute a new rear guard. The main body follows the follow and assume force. It moves rapidly on multiple routes in an approach march immediately behind the follow and assume force, protected on its flanks by security elements. It should contain sufficient combat power to protect itself and reinforce the flank or rear security forces if they come under attack. Normally, the rear guard initially conducts a withdrawal to break contact with the enemy forces around the perimeter. It contracts the perimeter as it delays behind the main body. If enemy forces closely pursue the breakout force, the efforts of the rear guard may become the main effort for the encircled force. The unit should position the reserve where it can also support the rear guard. Initially, the priority for fire support is with the rupture force. Those fires focus on suppressing and obscuring the point of penetration. Fire support assets move as part of the main body and rear guard, so security forces have adequate fire support. Target identification difficulties resulting from proximity and intermixing of forces, as well as the rapidly changing ground situation during the execution of a breakout, make close air support difficult. Engineers with the rupture force focus on mobility operations. Engineers with the follow and assume force or the reserve improve routes as necessary. Engineers supporting flank security elements focus on conducting counter-mobility operations. The rear guard must also have enough engineer support to conduct counter-mobility operations. The senior commander prioritizes supporting AMD assets to protect the rupture force, the rear guard, and the main body. This support may come from outside the encircled perimeter. The rear guard is second in priority of protection to help prevent enemy forces targeting the main body from overrunning it. Commanders can relieve sustainment shortfalls by using aerial resupply, ordering external forces to establish support areas, and using captured supplies. All units and vehicles carry the maximum supplies possible, with emphasis on carrying petroleum, oils, and lubricants, and ammunition. The encircled force only takes vehicles it can support. It may be possible for the higher echelon headquarters of the encircled force to establish an intermediate staging base as the breakout attack moves toward a link-up with other friendly forces. Considerations for an encircled defender. When defending an encircled area, units consider employing aviation, fires, engineer, and sustainment assets. Divisions and corps may consider relocating aviation systems from any attached combat aviation brigades to locations that are not in danger of encirclement. Aviation assets can rapidly bring additional firepower to bear on an encircling enemy force or rapidly move reaction forces to threatened locations along a defensive perimeter. Generally, aviation assets fly out of an encirclement when it becomes small enough to allow the enemy force's artillery to range throughout the area. The commander centrally controls fire support systems, such as artillery, to provide support at numerous points along the perimeter and mass fires. The commander designates the senior field artillery staff officer, such as the chief of fires or brigade fire support officer, to control fire support. At the BCT level, the field artillery battalion commander also advises the commander. At lower echelons, commanders may co-locate mortars from various units under centralized control, especially if there are insufficient artillery assets. Generally, engineers concentrate first on countermobility, then survivability, and then mobility. Defensive protective positions include, but are not limited to, command posts, signal nodes, and other facilities for the command and control warfighting function, critical equipment, to include sensors, supply and ammunition storage/holding areas, and other items that are likely to be targeted by enemy action. Dispersal is difficult in a perimeter-type defense. Therefore, the next best alternative is position hardening by constructing field fortifications. Encircled units closely monitor their sustainment assets and supply stocks, especially if they cannot be resupplied for an extended period. Leaders conserve and centrally control available resources. A commander may force units on the perimeter to cease all vehicle movement to allocate remaining fuel assets to the reserve. The senior commander within an encirclement retains essential sustainment capabilities to sustain the defense under the control of a senior sustainment operator or commander. When possible, that commander positions these units and their assets beyond the reach of potential penetrations in protected and concealed locations. The senior commander may incorporate other sustainment units into defensive positions in depth or around key facilities. A commander may choose to augment maneuver units with non-maneuver soldiers, although this action may affect the non-maneuver sustainment capabilities of the encircled force. Casualty evacuation and mortuary affairs pose challenges for an encircled force. The unit evacuates wounded from the encirclement whenever possible for humanitarian reasons. This also reduces the burden of providing long-term medical care to wounded soldiers. Soldiers have an inherent fear of encirclement by enemy forces. Unchecked, this fear can lead to a degradation in morale and discipline. When encircled, soldiers under the firm control of their leaders can withstand the mental strain. Discipline can disintegrate rapidly in an encirclement. Officers and non-commissioned officers must uphold the highest standards of discipline. Their personal conduct sets the example. Encircled soldiers need to see their senior commander and other leaders frequently. Leaders at all levels need to display a calm and confident manner. Soldiers in an encirclement must not regard their situation as desperate or hopeless. Commanders and leaders at all levels maintain the confidence of soldiers by resolute action and a positive attitude. They must keep their soldiers informed to suppress rumors and counter enemy propaganda. FM 3-90, May 2023. By order of the Secretary of the Army, James C. McConville, General, United States Army, Chief of Staff. Official. Signed, Mark F. Avril, Administrative Assistant to the Secretary of the Army.